You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Tori alongside Miles and Rob, and together we have over 75 years of experience advising on and brokering the physical precious metals. Each week, the three of us are going to provide you a technical analysis of the metals charts, but we also have to cover the underlying fundamentals and news that helps move and predict those charts. And if you'd like to follow along with the images, you can view this program on YouTube by going to our website at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. And without further ado, let's jump into our weekly recap, Miles.
Thank you, Tori. I appreciate it. And we'll take a quick look at the metals here as everything kind of revolves around Friday close of the Jackson Hole meeting, as we saw a fair bit of volatility on Friday and then some continuation of some existing trends expected. So gold up about 1.75% and still climbing as we're recording, currently sitting at $3,397. So we're getting real close to that 3,400 mark. We'll have to see if we push above it here in the next day or two. Silver, not to be outdone, also up 1.75%, sitting at $38.55 at the moment, and also on a little bit of a weekly rise. The other white metals, taking a look at platinum. Platinum slightly up about 0.5%, sitting at around $1,342 as it continues after its big push this past spring. Sit sideways, take a little bit of a breather in preparation for what it feels like is coming in the platinum market. And as I've been mentioning for the last couple weeks, platinum sister metal, palladium, remains bearish, remains on a declining trend, down 2.5%, and is back under $1,100, currently sitting at $1,085. Also, thanks again to the Friday announcements following Jackson Hole and some of the expected interest rate stuff, we're looking at the S&P up about 1.6% on the week. That wasn't the whole story, as the S&P put in another slightly higher high than the previous highs. S&P all-time highs again this past week following Friday's news. And finally, not surprised, dollar down all over the place this past week, but it is down very slightly, basically even, sitting at 98.2, but a lot of volatility over Friday and Monday as we saw a big decline and a bounce back in the dollar. So boys, where do we want to start this week? Taking a look at the precious metals. And I think more importantly, Tori, don't hold me, I didn't actually say this out loud, but this may be a week where the fundamentals matter more than the charts.
Well, the charts are still fun to look at. I mean, that volatility from Friday is kind of what we were expecting, up or down. We didn't know what Powell was going to say from Jackson, Wyoming. Yes, he came out dovish, which means there's a real chance that a Fed lending rate cut. And of course, the markets love that. But of course, gold's going to jump because it's going to drive the dollar lower, mm-hmm. and it's going to drive all assets higher. And we'll see what ends up actually playing out. My concern, with that being such a focus of the volatility, is that we don't know for sure. I mean, it's already the fact that we've seen odds go way down that we would see more than one rate cut if we do get one in September.
Yeah, we talked about this in our prep for the show. I mean, everybody's focused on rate cuts. What is it that we're not seeing?
Yeah, what is it that we're not seeing? Why is it so important? There's certainly pros and cons. We went into that in last week's show. All these arguments for and all these arguments against. But it's almost like the debate is over. Like, they're set on rate cuts. And I don't understand necessarily why, because inflation is hot. So people are saying Chairman Powell has caved and that this is merely political. Well, the only reason that it's even on the table is because of the bad jobs numbers. So they have this dual mandate, the Federal Reserve, to reduce unemployment and reduce inflation, keep it in their target of 2%. They've done a terrible job of each of those mandates management, you know, from over the last number of years.
Yeah, which do you choose?
Yeah.
You can't just equally do bad in both categories.
Right now, that's kind of the case. I mean, they've been obviously really focused on inflation. The labor market, the unemployment numbers got so artificially low that they didn't have to worry about the jobs numbers. They just could focus on inflation. Well, little did they know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics was going to come out and just decimate all of 2024's numbers and 2025. they ended up having just in May and June, we reduced more than 400,000 jobs. I mean, we're down almost 500,000 jobs in the U.S. payroll data in 2025. And that's big news. That is what has the Fed spooked. So Powell said, quote, "The shifting balance of risks may warrant adjusting our policy stance," unquote. So that policy stance isn't happening because inflation is at 2% like the Fed wants. It's not. It's running. It's climbing. It's going to top out over 3.3 by December would be my guess. And with CPI and PPI coming out so strong, why have the risks shifted? Well, because it's the deterioration of the labor market.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what else could they cut from the inflation calculation to keep the numbers low? Because they're kind of running out of things, right? I think there's only like 7 things left in calculating price inflation. And pricedingold.com, I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with that, but they do take the time to go back and calculate inflation rates based on how the government calculated inflation 30, 40, 50 years ago. So there is that little known trick where if you don't like the numbers, just remove some of them. And I'm kind of wondering how quickly they're going to run out of things to remove.
Well, I can eradicate the entire Bureau of Labor Statistics if we just use the postage stamp index as our reflection of inflation.
There you go. That's like priced in gold.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, it is. I mean, that's the government running a business, but that's the real world. That's the post office. As inefficient as it is, it's still pretty efficient, and their costs continue to rise every year.
Welcome to life in general. That's been the case throughout the last 50 years since we separated from gold. Yeah. And Nixon closed a gold window. And in fact, the last time the Federal Reserve cut rates into rising inflation, so we have rising inflation again.
Yeah.
The last time the Federal Reserve cut rates into rising inflation was in the 1970s. And we all know what happened by 79. Inflation was out of control. It ends up bringing in new administration under Reagan. Volcker as Fed chair, he has to get super aggressive with raising rates to cool the inflation. But I'm not saying that we're going to have like this incredible 15% plus inflation again. I'm just saying that you're pouring fuel on this fire of inflation if you cut rates in September. And everybody wants it because it makes borrowing cheaper. And it means business can operate more efficiently and borrow more and hire more people and pay better wages. I get all the economic stimulus piece, but it comes at a cost.
And they can't really afford to let interest rates go up because of the debt service. Trump wants to lower the value of the U.S. dollar. I mean, being the reserve currency of the world is wonderful because you can print money and buy everybody else's products, but at the same time, you eviscerate your own manufacturing infrastructure because you cannot compete in the global arena because your currency is too strong. So he's trying to do so many things at once. We need to, at some point, dive deep into the next thing that this administration is going to spring on us.
And we know not only is it weaker dollar, but it's drive revenue. If you're not getting it from taxes, you're driving revenue now through tariffs. You're driving revenue now through foreign investment.
Well, you're getting foreign investors diverting from their money that's already in treasury debt to keep it here in the U.S. They don't want that money to leave. So they're incentivizing them to invest in U.S. manufacturing infrastructure.
Sure. This was that thing you talked about last week, Rob, because
right.
I don't want to get past a point you made a second ago that I think we're going to want to circle back to, is you said, while everybody's focused on the inflation and the rate cut discussion, what's happening on the other side of the table that nobody's looking at? And I think that's what you're hinting at, if I'm not wrong.
I am. I mean, we can go back to the beginning of the year when Secretary Treasury Scott Bessent said, within the next 12 months, we're going to monetize the asset side of the U.S. balance sheet for the American people. We are going to put the assets to work. That was 7 months ago.
And that means that the government owns a whole bunch of stuff. It's either not looked upon as a productive asset, or it's not valued accurately or correctly.
You could listen to Howard Lutnick. He's the Secretary of Commerce. And he said, we have a $6.5 trillion budget. We have a $4.5 trillion revenue stream. Our total GDP is $29 trillion, and now our debt is over $37 trillion. And Lutnick said, we're going to hell. what is the balance sheet of the United States of America? What's everything we own? And he said, I think it's $500 trillion.
So that would just evaporate in terms of the $37 trillion in debt. You just erase it. You hit the reset by monetizing assets. So what are those assets?
Okay. When they say this, what is their solution? And what their solution is the United States Sovereign Wealth Fund. This is a state-backed investment strategy using a sovereign wealth fund to hold and unlock national assets on a state-backed balance sheet. This SWF will remonetize not just gold, but every asset tied to the U.S., land, oil, mineral rights, everything.
Yeah.
And here's how it works. Like Anwar oil field up in Alaska, it's proven to have more reserves than Saudi Arabia. That all goes into the sovereign wealth fund, and it churns out a royalty. Just think if the U.S. government collected a royalty on that oil forever. Now, other countries do this, okay?
Sure, but, Saudi Arabia, for example.
Yeah, or, golly, China does this. Norway does this.
Russia,
okay. But there's other idle resources sitting in the U.S. There's a mine called the Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay, Alaska. It has 80 billion pounds of copper, 107 million ounces of gold, and many other important minerals waiting to be brought into production. But it takes about 10 years to get all the approval from all the different agencies and get it open. So instead of the government granting mining licenses, the U.S. simply takes a cut of the profits on U.S. lands, and they cut the permitting process from 10 years to 10 weeks.
Well, I think we could certainly benefit from seeing that. I mean, even if all that's doing is driving tax revenues, because if the government wasn't taking this kind of nationalizing business approach, which is what concerns me, like this is certainly government largesse and stepping in.
Very much so.
I get, again, we're driving revenues. We're driving government income, in a sense. It's like you looking for another way to get some passive income going while you're working full-time Monday through Friday as a household. So the government's doing that, great. I doubt it's going to equate to lower taxes from an income tax standpoint. They're not going to let us off the hook. But it could reduce the debt. I see the beauty of that. And yet it's also concerning from the standpoint of that's not free market either.
No, it's not.
Who's going to get the preferential treatment?
Exactly. This is big government directing big business, and who benefits. Now, the information I'm pulling this from is from Goldfix and International Man, but I know they're telling the truth because we've got the quotes. We know what they've been told to do. And listen, Howard Lutnick was the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, a major Wall Street insider. These guys know all about financializing assets. This is what Wall Street does when they bring companies public. But instead of giant wind turbines or solar panel farm next door, Americans are going to have to deal with their forests being harvested, coal mines reopened, gas wells down the street. I mean, you get the picture.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're already financializing carbon, right? And wind, and things that you can't even see. And so, of course, this seems like certainly a creative, if not effective, solution for just the bottom line. If you're just talking about the math.
Okay, let's say we give the Trump administration the benefit of the doubt that they are doing this for the right reasons. Well, what about the next guys? It reminds me a lot of when the Bush administration put into effect the Patriot Act. You could assume that they were doing that well-intentioned, but the next administrations came along and used the Patriot Act not against the people it was intended to, but against Americans themselves. So this is all very concerning. I get it. They can either print money, default, let a depression happen, or try to find a way out. This is their way out. I just don't like the direction in terms of the merger of big business and big government. That really concerns me.
Well, and my big concern, there's been screaming opposition for decades about the leverage that varying lobbying groups and industry has over Washington already. Mm-hmm. Who's going to get voting rights over the sovereign wealth fund? Mm-hmm. The highest owner? Is it going to work? I don't know how the system works, but are we looking at something similar to common stock voting rights?
Rockefeller. Like
are we? Yeah, exactly.
Robert Barron's.
Acceptable pull. That's a good, that's a deep pull.
It is a deep pull.
So here's where I start getting frustrated with this is, are we just selling off the United States to the highest bidder? And I can understand how the short term net positive ends up giving a brief injection to the United States economy as a whole, and possibly, if not probably, puts a significant dent in the overspending and might even lower overspending in years in the future. But I know a couple things about the United States because I've lived here a while, and that's at any point down the road that we curtail or rearrange how our spending goes, we immediately find a new thing to go waste money on to fill the gap.
You're so right on that, Miles. Every time we raise a tax to solve a problem, the tax never goes away.
Yep.
They'll put toll roads out on highways to pay for it, and once it's paid for it, they never take them down.
Yeah, toll roads are a good example. I'll tell you the other thing this is going to do is it's just going to widen the wealth gap. So the wealth gap in the United States has gotten so out of control. In the 1990s, the wealth gap between the top 1% and the bottom 50% was $3 trillion. And now that gap is $40 trillion because 0.1% of Americans own almost six times more wealth than the bottom 50% of Americans. And I know that sounds like political jargon, but it really does matter because you end up concentrating power, influence, and everything that goes along with that into a very small number of people. That was not the way the free market was designed.
I know.
So this is meddling in the free market, which disadvantages people while advantaging others.
Well, it is supposed to put more and more people to work.
Well, okay.
And I get that.
The bottom 50%.
Tory's over here channeling his inner Bernie Sanders.
I hate to even go down this road, but it's important because that's where we're going.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't an option, okay? This is a stated fact. This is where we're going, and people need to deal with this. And what does that mean for the U.S. dollar? Because a lot of this also hinges on a weaker U.S. dollar policy.
Does the sovereign wealth fund become a pool of assets available at some point decades down the road to be tapped for the right necessity? I don't know, sort of like Social Security was. I'm always hesitant when we're talking about the government rolling out a quote-unquote voluntary program.
Well, I'll tell you, even if this doesn't happen, nothing changes because from an insurance standpoint, it's going to happen on some scale. It already is happening,
such as
Intel and some of the other things they're doing with rare earth minerals and all that. It's been happening in different market sectors. And then if you're on the right side of the fence in that market sector, i.e. education or healthcare, you're making a mint, whereas those that are not are falling further behind. So what do you do, listener? I know you're tired of hearing us say this, but honestly, all roads do lead to gold. And in this instance, all roads lead to assets. You have to own assets. You can't be sitting in dollars. Now, equities can count as assets. Miles, you showed us the S&P. It's not just the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones Industrial. All these equity markets are at all-time highs. They're adjusting for a weaker dollar. Gold up 105%, cryptocurrencies doing what they're doing, all predicated on the weakening of the dollar and the loss of purchasing power. So you have to own assets. And if this rate cut comes, the S&P is going to love it because when the Fed has cut rates, when the S&P has been within 2% of its all-time highs, and Miles, you already pointed out, we're there already. We're at an all-time high this week. When the Fed has done that 20 out of the last 20 times, the S&P rose an average of 13.9% over the following 12 months. Guys, that's economic stimulation. That's great. But gold's going to do that.
Yeah,
even more in spades, right? Every asset's going to do that. That's driving inflation because you're driving money supply. You're making it easier through credit and through these digital created items like cryptocurrencies and otherwise. You're stimulating the money supply. And when you do that, everything goes up. And that's why you better be sitting in some assets. You better be owning assets.
Right. You know, you're going to see the money multiplier and the velocity of money picking up. The last thing I want to say about nationalizing and financializing our $500 trillion worth of America, we have the cleanest air, we have the cleanest water from any other country, and we're going to sacrifice that. We just are. And also, people sitting in just bank accounts with assets not doing anything. The only way to get through this with all the changes that are coming is to actually own real assets that you own and control. And gold is the premier of all.
It is. And gold's telling a story right now. This program will be on YouTube each week as well, so you can see the visual charts and images. And the best place to go actually for that is our website, which is mcalvaney.com/news. That's mcalvaney.com/news. I think we need to come back to gold from a technical analysis standpoint.
Yeah, it's about time.
What you're
like halfway
seeing,
through the show already. In fact, we're almost done with the show. We got to hurry.
Well, the miners are telling a story. It's not just the spot price.
Yeah, the miners are telling a story. And I think it's fascinating. If you look at the graph of junior miners, they're doing one thing, but the ratio between the junior miners and the value of gold is a very interesting chart. Miles, pull those up.
Sure. Yeah, I was looking at the miners earlier because obviously anybody who's sitting in a miner position, especially the juniors, just the tear that we've seen some of the, not just gold miners, but, you know, we're in the gold industry, so that's what we focus on. And we're coming into a multi-year channel ceiling where we'll very likely see a little bit of, let's say, competition between the bulls and the bears. I mean, the bulls have been pretty much in control of the miners since about the beginning of 2024. So it's been a year and a half now. And I'm looking at this going, okay, believe it or not, despite being the office curmudgeon when it comes to gold, I actually am arguably short-term bullish on the gold metal. You know, from a chart perspective, I like pullbacks and I'm always rooting for one to happen. But realistically, as this sideways pause has taken place over the last couple of months, the longer this goes on, the less likely it is gold is going to come down unless everything does. You know, the everything bubble pops like 2008. So unless something like that happens, I'm bullish on gold. So on the flip side, I'm looking at the miners and going, yeah, the miners need to take a break. And the last couple times the miners have taken a break, we're talking about significant declines, like 75% of the rise type of declines. The junior miners are very volatile. They don't just take casual corrections. They take very aggressive corrections. So I then looked at that and I said, okay, well, what's the correlation between the guys digging it out of the ground and the stuff itself? So just like we do with other things, I went and looked at the relative value of gold divided by the miners. And I found kind of the opposite idea where it's such an inverse relationship.
It's
a great correlation.
Yeah, inverse correlation, yeah.
Yeah, both rising. Obviously, gold is slowly becoming more valuable compared to the miners over time as the bottom of that chart is rising. But as the miners have been hitting a top, we've been looking at a bottom of this, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I can't go out and recommend this to people, but is it time to pull profits out of the guy digging it out of the dirt and just buy the stuff outright for a little bit?
Well, I think you can make that case, Miles, because
Always. Everybody
chases the rise. You know, everybody looks at the price action over here or over there, and they want to jump on the momentum, but that momentum is probably going to reverse, whereas the physical gold itself will continue to rise. I think now's a great time to take profits out of your mining position and move it into physical.
If the equities markets have a major pullback,
oh,
if we have a crash,
the
miners get decimated,
oh, yeah.
The physical gold does not. In fact, the spot price can come down a little bit and the physical market can see premium increases and it will be
this major separation between the price of a Krugerrand versus the spot price in New York.
Yes. Yeah. And certainly the mining shares and what they did historically, they could be in mutual funds and get pulled down. So you do have to be careful to own the physical asset is what we specialize in, what we focus on. And all of this is predicated in the short term, this next quarter, by the Federal Reserve rate policy, and we will see what happens. My bet is it's one and done, that we'll get a cut in September. The jobs numbers and the CPI and PPI that are coming out right before that are going to discourage them a little bit, and it's going to be it. And we're not going to see the real estate rally that everybody was hoping for, and we will learn a lot after that September 17th decision.
Yeah. And next week, we're going to talk about the one last thing that this administration is focused on, which concerns you and your money.
Well, a quarter point rate cut only helps current homeowners in Blackwater. So I don't actually know how that's going to help anybody, but maybe that's just me. So that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. If you liked what you heard, we encourage you to head on over to our website. That's McElvaney.com, McAlvaney.com. You can find us on Twitter at ICAGold or Facebook at McElvaney Financial. And as always, if you'd like to talk to one of us about your personal portfolio, give us a call. We can be reached at 800-525-9556. Thanks for listening and have a great week.